Let's go back 35 years now to one of New Zealand's worst riots. December 7th, 1984, Auckland's Queen Street was the scene of fighting between young people and police. It ended in 130 arrests and over $1 million worth of damage to cars and looted shops. Today in the sound archives of Ngā Taonga Sound and Vision with Sarah Johnston, we are going to hear a bit about the cause of the riot and the aftermath. Hi, Sarah.
Kia ora, Jesse. Yeah, well, this began with a free rock concert in Aotea Square, which was organised by a local radio station at the time, 89 FM. And it was a free concert to mark the end of the school year. It was called Thank God It's Over. It featured the bands Herbs, The Mockers and Dee Dee Smash, fronted by Dave Dobbin. So it was a sunny afternoon in Auckland. There was about 10,000 people there, but significantly quite a lot of them were drinking alcohol. And everything was fine until there was a power outage at the start of Dee Dee Smash's set. They were the third act to perform. And this upset some of the crowd, and then there were a few people who were watching from the roof of the nearby post office, and they started throwing cans and urinating on people below, and the police got a bit upset, and it all deteriorated from there. So here's how 1ZB reporter Ray Wilmot described what happened next.
One of the country's favourite bands, Dee Dee Smash. They were one of several playing to a crowd of 10,000. Then from nowhere, the good sound turned bad.
Hey man, you might know what those assholes are doing to us.
What started it? Here's the city's top policeman, Acting Commander Graham Perry.
Police were in a very low-profile situation here at the concert. Some offences were committed up on the post office area. An arrest was made as a result of that. The police were pelted with bottles. The band stopped playing, and as a result of that, a cascade of bottles came out of the crowd. The police were outnumbered. The crowd started breaking windows, and the situation developed from there.
But how do the younger people see it?
They're looking for something to happen. They want to see things being smashed up. They want to see action, you know?
Why?
They want to see it because they never dreamed this would happen. Hey, this is what they call exciting, the real thing. It usually happens on the TV, right? Well, this is the real thing, man. This hardly ever happens. They want to see action, you know?
Then the looting started as police kept up a running battle with the groups they'd split up in a divide-and-conquer operation.
It's 1ZB reporter Ray Wilmot covering the 1984 Queen Street riot. I remember it was big story at the time, Sarah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, this was sort of Friday night shopping downtown Auckland. There was lots of families around, and all of a sudden, you know, it was the streets of Belfast or something. So as Ray Wilmot reported there, the police were trying to quell this unruly segment of the crowd, but then they started getting pelted with bottles. So the next step was they ordered the concert to be called off. So afterwards, there was an inquiry into the riot, and the concert organiser, Barry Everard, who was managing the radio station, gave his version of events.
Fred Boddicker, our senior announcer, myself and you, Len, argued that it was not a good idea, and we put this in the strongest possible terms. It was not a request, but a demand. There was a sergeant and a policewoman. We were told that the policewoman had come from the commissioner at Central Police Station with the direction that the concert be stopped. They said words to the effect, according to the regulations or agreement, when it gets out of control, we have the right to stop a concert. You do it, or we will. I said there were 10,000 people out there still enjoying themselves, and I was concerned at their reaction. It is important to note that the audience and ourselves were aware that a substantial number of the most familiar and favoured songs from this group were still to come. The concert was scheduled to finish at 8:30 p.m. At this stage, I indicated to the band to stop and come off stage. The band came off the stage, and our announcer went on and announced, "I am sorry, people, but the police have told us to stop the concert." Almost immediately, violence erupted generally. The announcer had to run off stage, and shortly thereafter, the gear was brought off the stage. The band leader expressed his views in forthright terms to the policeman for stopping the concert. The bombardment of the stage lasted 15 to 20 minutes. This was the first time at which bottles had been thrown onto the stage. As soon as possible, the stage was cleared and the stage area secured. The security guards were left at the toilets and car parks. The square emptied quickly and was substantially empty when people began attacking the information centre.
So I imagine without the concert to keep the crowd occupied, things got quickly out of hand, Sarah.
Yes, so as the crowd started to move away, they started to, you know, start smashing up shop windows. Police and riot gear moved on to try and disperse the crowd. And remember, this is just a couple of years after the 1981 Springbok tour. So yeah. I think you would be safe in saying that relations between police and young people were generally at a pretty low ebb still. So once they saw police and riot gear, things got very ugly. A number of police were injured. Some cars were overturned, you know, looting of Queen Street shops. And people might remember there's a very famous image of a Māori warden, Hine Grindley, who got some other people together and they stepped between the police and the rioters and formed a sort of human chain to calm the situation. But also, in the general melee, there were some innocent concert goers who felt they were very unfairly targeted by the riot police. So this next cut is from a Marist brother and teacher, John McKenzie, who submitted a complaint because he and a group of his pupils were set upon and they were just innocently heading home a block away from the concert.
This guy, a policeman, grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and said words to the effect of, "I don't care, you know, we want you to move," and threw me on the ground. When I was on the ground, I was hit in the back by, I'm not sure what it was, a baton or a boot or something. And my reaction changed completely. I became extremely angry then, of course. And as I was getting up, I saw one of the other boys being hit by a baton. He was only quite young, he's a fourth former, and that angered me even more. And I jumped up, and the policeman who had thrown me on the ground was standing beside me, and I demanded to know his number. He was quite happy to tell me. In fact, he even told me his name. You know, he didn't seem particularly perturbed about the business at all. Now, someone shouted out, "That's a Marist brother you're hitting," or whatever he was doing, the policeman, to me. And maybe that had some effect on the policeman, because at that stage they just ran off.
As a teacher, what do you think this sort of experience is going to have on your pupils?
I've often argued with boys about police. I've said they've got an important job to do. Their role in the community is a very essential role. Now, how can I try and get the youth under my care to respect the police when I have not been given the respect due to me as, firstly, as a New Zealand citizen, and secondly, as someone in charge of a group of youth?
So a commission of inquiry, as I said before, was set up to look into the cause of the riot, and the role of alcohol particularly came under scrutiny. But also there were sort of socioeconomic factors in play here, and those were examined too. A large percentage, I think it was about 40-50% of those arrested were young Māori and Pacifica unemployed people. This next cut is an Auckland artist, Emily Karaka, who worked with street kids in central Auckland. And she told the inquiry that she was not surprised that they had sort of seized this opportunity to lash out at police.
But I know for a fact a lot of the street youth in Auckland used the concert to initiate their own reaction to the violence that they have been wearing from police. They have been victimised for a long time, but they are a voiceless people. They are the sort of the rejects of society. They have no one to really stand up and voice for them. So they did use this concert as a cover. I think society can't help but ask for what happened that night. Those children are really victimised a lot of the time.
So that was Emily Karaka, who was an artist giving evidence to the Commission of Inquiry there. So eventually the Queen Street riot led to legislation which gave local bodies greater powers over alcohol licensing, so they could declare events and areas, you know, no alcohol zones for concerts like this.
Amazing that it took that give councillors those powers, because it's sort of taken for granted now, right?
Absolutely. And another thing we take for granted is the introduction of age ID cards for purchasing alcohol, because a lot of the liquor stores in the area that were blamed for selling alcohol to underage concert goers said, well, you know, how are we supposed to tell their age? And so they'd be advocating to get these cards brought in. However, most famously, the authorities tried to pin the riot on a very unlikely suspect, singer Dave Dobbin. As we were saying, he was at this stage, he was the lead singer of Dee Dee Smash. And this was due to a comment which he made on stage right at the beginning when he saw the police and riot gear at the back of the crowd. I will just paraphrase, but he suggested that they put their batons away in no uncertain terms. This last cut is Dave. He's remembering later on, looking back at this, and just the case was dismissed, the case against him, but it was very costly for him in a number of ways.
Thanks, Sarah.
Well, between the police and the insurance companies, they tried to nail it on somebody, and I was the fall guy, I think. But I managed to, you know, get some lawyers on side. And
well, lawyers cost, though, don't they?
They do cost. It cost me a lot of time. It cost me a lot of. I sort of kissed one of my records goodbye. I couldn't play live for a long time, and it was really traumatic, actually. Mm. And I found out later that I was up against the prosecutor was the guy who kept Arthur Allen Thomas in prison for three trials. So
against
I'm glad I didn't know that at the time. I would have fainted, I think.
That's the voice of a young Dave Dobbin. Hello, Dave, if you're listening. Recalling the personal cost of the 1984 Queen Street riot 35 years ago, thanks to the Sound Archives, Taonga Sound and Vision.